Enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks so much for being
around. All right, yeah, we'll be in touch.
It's Dave O'Neill here on The Debrief, my podcast where I talk to a comedian on the way home from a gig. And I've got in the car none other than the great man, rising star, Duroc J. Singer.
Thank you very much. It's funny you say rising star. I'm literally about to go to a gig called Melbourne's Comedy Rising Stars.
Yeah, so, I think you'll be on that. There was a comedian called Dave Grant who used to always talk about comedians who were strapped to the rocket.
Yeah.
And you've been strapped to the rocket, and he'd always say, "You grazed me on the way past." As you're strapped on the rocket.
Well, that's very lovely. Thank you, Dave.
The rocket's pretty high power to lift you off the ground.
It's a visual medium, man.
It's a fat joke. I can do fat jokes because I'm fat.
Yes, so. And also an arsehole. So that
yeah,
works.
Yeah, that's, it works well.
So we just did a storytelling gig. That was a bit different to the normal stand-up gigs that
yeah,
we do.
Yeah, explain it for everyone listening. Where was it?
Glenira. Which is Caulfield,
but it was
part
Glenora,
of the council. They've got a storytelling festival.
Yes,
and this was the comedy storytelling night. And
yes.
So you had a bunch of stand-ups basically doing their stand-up. You did good though. You like too long.
I told a few stories, but yeah. I've got a few stories. I mean, it's good. So did you? You did like that?
No, I cheated. I cheated by at the top saying.
My story.
Like, I just talk about coming from Australia to Sri Lanka to Australia.
Yeah.
And I just said, my story starts February 18, 2004. So it makes them think that it's actually a legitimate story.
A series of fat jokes.
Yeah. No, but basically I was like, I just wedged in every bit of stand-up that I normally do, but keeping within the theme of going, this happened in Australia after I moved in. I mean, look, to be honest, it did flow like a story, but the reality was it's just isolated bits of stand up across the years.
It's one of those things where they occasionally. I did this gig once for people that own the cloud. They run the cloud.
I don't know what that is. As in the internet cloud.
Yeah, you don't know what that is.
No, I know what the cloud is. I didn't know that people run it.
Well, yeah, people run it. Oh, but it's not an actual cloud. It's just warehouses in Wagga Wagga where there's
So there's a veterinary school, and the cloud.
And the cloud.
And so they must have access to so many people's data.
Well, this is what I'm saying. And so the person kept saying, you've got to write jokes about the cloud. Do some stuff. Can you do stuff about the cloud? I'm like, yeah. I did stuff about the cloud. They didn't laugh. So then I just go back to my normal stand-up. And then I would just occasionally refer to it. Oh, this is in the cloud, guys. It's all in the cloud tonight.
Right.
So sometimes when people, you find that when they prescribe stuff to you,
they don't really know. Has that ever worked for you where someone says, oh, you should have a go at... Because the classic thing that happens with like footy club gigs and stuff like that, they'll come and whisper in your ear, oh, I got some jokes for you. You should have a go at Macca or whatever.
Yeah.
But then you turned out to do it. You go to do it and then it turns out it's either like a really sad, like, you
sad
know,
story.
Sad issue and, you know...
Or no one else knows about it.
Correct. Have you had ones where it's paid off?
Oh, look, there's been some great ones. But
right.
There's been plenty. Well, the ones that are good for me are like doing groups of... I did a group of school admin people the other day. So people that run administrations in, I think they're independent schools, private schools.
Okay.
And they were great because I've got all this stuff on teachers and education that I can do because I've got three kids. And I trained to be a teacher, so...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? You're right.
But, you know, I remember doing a principals conference, absolutely smashing it. So all principals.
Right.
And I had to get up and do all this stuff about teaching and kids and that. The next time I had to do car dealers.
Right.
I reckon I had about 30 seconds on cars.
Into
the fat jokes.
Just cars are great, but I struggle to fit in them
because
I'm fat. And then back. I got stumped the other day where I started to fumble a bunch of words, like as in I just couldn't remember where I was in the set, and I just knew that it had to be either about being brown or fat. So I ended up saying, so I'm a big Sri Lankan. Hey, I just knew that it was one of those two things, and just tried to remember where I was in the spot.
Now, what do you normally do after a gig? So we're
eat.
Say that gig. Yeah, we'll say here. I mean, that's why I'm fat. No, seriously, I'm like an alcoholic.
Yeah.
You know, alcoholics go into country towns and suburbs and they scope out who's selling what grog.
Right.
I drive into a country town and go, good bakery there.
Okay. Yeah,
right. 24-hour servo over there. There's a fish and chip shop there.
Right, like what's it called, when robbers and stuff, they escape.
Yeah, you scope it out a bit.
Yeah.
But so what would you...
Okay, so usually after a gig, I mean, I usually hang around, talk... you know, talk shit with the other comics. Still, they kind of, you know, I used to drink a lot. I've stopped drinking now, but I used to get.
I was listening to my headphones.
Yeah.
I was listening to you in my headphones.
I was suddenly worried whether it stopped recording or something.
Yeah, it's all right.
No, so yes, I still love smashing piss after the after good. It's
is
funny.
Is that a technical term? Or
yes. it's an Aussie term, mate. You'll understand one day. but I found that if I had a bad gig, I'd be like, oh, it's a bad gig, shit. I better get some shit and drink some booze.
Yeah,
but if it's a good gig, I'm like, hey, it was a good gig. Let's celebrate by having some shitty food.
Yeah, it happens either way, doesn't it?
Yeah, you just find a reason to...
I know.
To,
if I have a bad gig, I don't have them that often, but I do have occasional. I did have one. Oh, yeah, and I just always go, I sit in my car and I go, maybe I'm more of a writer. I think I'm a writer. I think that's what I am best at.
That was a killer gig of yours. There was so much of stuff that I hadn't seen before.
Oh, really?
Because you don't like the stories. You don't really. I mean, unless I saw you, if I catch you at a festival show.
Yeah, festival shows.
You wouldn't really pull them out. But there was some corkers, like the fireworks one's great. The bomb. Yeah, making
story.
A bomb. I've got stuck in my head now that song, Ging Gang Gully. I don't know where what.
That's a scout song.
Yeah, right. Gully, 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 watch out. Ging Gang Go, Ging Gang Go. Sarah, Sarah, Sarah. Shalawala,
Shalawala. That's it. You weren't in scouts in Sri Lanka?
No, but I was molested, so.
As my dad said in the Royal Commission, my dad was a scout leader. And
really?
Yeah, he was a scout leader. Yeah, right. Oh yeah, god yeah. He loved it. And not what you think. He loved the uniform.
Yeah.
As my mum once said.
Yeah, right.
He loves your father. He loves wearing uniforms and hanging out with men. That's what she said. It's true.
Yeah.
So anyway,
as you said on stage as well, YMCA.
He was also in a Village People cover band. That's right.
Is that true?
No. It's a musical. But
the Scouts is true, right?
Well, no, Scouts is true. Yeah, and he'll in the Royal Commission into child, you know, offences. The Scouts was one good organisation. They said that reported their pedophiles and put them on a blacklist, as opposed to say the Catholic Church. That said, our venture leader, which is older Scouts, went to prison for such offences. Yeah, yeah, he was a bad,
very
bad man.
Do you get a badge for that when you?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't know.
I was hoping my podcast would be G-rated, bro.
Sorry. Oh, you didn't tell me that.
No, it's not G-rated. It's a comic. It's two comics driving home. It's what about that?
Do you reckon you'd have potentially there'll be one episode where you ended up crashing, and that's like the last year of a comic. Their last words were, "Be prepared."
At least my kids have a record of my death.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. He did what he died doing what he loved.
Can we listen to Daddy's podcast again? Where he dies. We love that one with Dilrock J. Singer.
But
what about the process of going through your material that went well, or do you have a checklist?
Totally.
You're a former accountant, so surely do you write it down or?
No, it depends. I used to write out the set list all the time, but now I especially if I'm doing a new show at the festival, for example, almost every night in the first 2 weeks, I will write out the dot points of everything just as a refresher.
Yeah.
But by about the third week, I think I've stuck in my head, and then I like to sort of, you know, trust myself and go with it. And occasionally, I'll find different ways to get to bits. Like, you know, you get locked into structure, when you stop sort of...
A funnier way to get to a bit.
Better way to get to it,
yeah.
And but then when the spots like this, I kind of... I don't know, I've become a little bit more comfortable on stage enough to kind of...
Yeah.
I try and remember... I try and plan where I start and end, put it that way.
Yeah, sure. I haven't seen you since we did Roadshow this time last year, I reckon.
Yeah, it was about May last year, yeah.
Yeah, and you're definitely more relaxed on stage.
Right.
You've improved.
Yeah,
You've gone from like a 4.5 to a 5.5.
Out of five. Okay, I was going to say, I was like, wow, 4.5 out of 5, that's good. And then I realized what you're saying.
you've always been good. But how long have you been doing stand-up?
Six and a bit years.
That's pretty amazing. You have had a pretty, not a quick rise, but you've certainly, well, you're an example. You're a great example for anyone studying comedy. You studied it, didn't you? You studied hard. You went to every gig.
Right.
You went to a lot of gigs.
So technically, I did study hard, but the way... as in I would be at the after I did.
I didn't do a course, but I
remember because I went from an account. I was an accountant, and then I used to work at KPMG, and I was hating
it. Don't mention names, man.
Oh, we know you.
No, that's all right. It's fine.
What are they going to do? Like, yeah, take back? Yeah, exactly. That'd be good. That'd be good for the thing.
Good
but
for
no.
publicity.
But also, I would never really say anything too bad about them. It was never really.
You enjoyed it, sort of. They were not.
No. I liked. No. The smaller firm I worked for after KPMG is what I enjoyed. I'm still in contact with my boss from that firm. We send each other the cryptic crossword in the morning. Like, I'll have a crack at it, take a photo of it, and send it to him, and then he'll send me some answers and stuff like that. And we, yeah. So he and I get along great. In fact, we're coming up to tax time, and he's going to help me with that as well. But no, the KPMG was really bad, and I really hated it, but the money was good, and I kind of thought, oh, what would I do if I had all the money in the world? And then stand-up sort of popped in my head, and then I was like, I should have a crack, and then I drank for about a year of partying after that once I got fired from KPMG, and then I decided actually going to do it, and then I did my first 5 minutes at the Comics Lounge on a Tuesday.
You did the Tuesday night.
Tuesday night in front of 20 people. This is a 400-500 seater.
Yeah.
And 20 people, it feels really lonely. So and I bombed really badly.
Did you?
Massive. Like maybe one laugh at the end, but like a pity laugh. But I think what happened is it was the first time I did something that I enjoyed the process of. Like, I actually loved the writing.
Even
in high school, I'd want to study because I wanted to get a good job, and I wanted a good job to get money. You know what I mean? There was never something I actually enjoyed doing in the moment.
Yeah.
So for me, when it clicked, I was like, straight away, the next day I went to my boss, like, after doing one gig of bombing.
Yeah.
I said to him, all right, I want to be a comedian.
This is it.
This is it. I literally said, I want Tuesdays off. I said, I knew I was, you know, it's going to be a long road, and I knew I can't pull out straight away.
Yeah.
So I asked him if I can have one day off, so I just worked 4 days. And he couldn't understand why I would sacrifice a day's pay to do something that doesn't pay any money.
Yeah,
and I was like, it's an apprenticeship, don't worry about it.
It is an apprenticeship. That's
and
right.
So I did that for a while, for about 4 days a week, and then I dropped down to 3 days and 2 days and so on like that. Until it sort of became too hard to even do one day a week, you know what I mean? So now,
But
I never really, I don't understand sometimes people just, it's like, it's sexy to say you're a full-time comic, but some people say that and they're living in like, you know, a share house with 14 people, like 2 hours outside the city just so that they can survive. Whereas I was always like, I want to live in the, you know, I want to live comfortably.
Yeah, you want to have a good standard of living.
I figured the way it works is because I was able to live in the city, I was able to go to gigs every night. Do you know what I mean? It was never
That's right.
So even in my head, even though I had made the decision that, okay, after one gig, right, this is it, I'm a stand-up comedian, in my head, I didn't say it out loud because only wankers would say that after one gig. But in my head, I was just like, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. But then I was like, well, what does a comic do? Well, they'll be at a gig every night. You know what I mean? Even if they're not on. So I just treated it like a job and I would show up to gigs. But in terms of like studying it, I always feel like, I loved it. Like, I still really love it. So it was kind of like a bonus that you know, I was learning as I was watching, because it's literally like all of a sudden I was able to watch gigs for free, whereas during the festival.
Well, how are you going to get around this guy?
I don't know what this dude is doing.
Yeah.
Bad driving. Yeah, but see, that's how you learn, is by watching it. I remember when I first met you, I reckon it might have been at Spleen. I said to someone, who's the big guy down the front laughing a lot?
And right.
And someone said, oh, he's a comic.
Yeah.
The way you did it is old school, because that's when I started, there was no internet, there was no YouTube, no mobile phones. You had to go to gigs to get gigs, and you would watch.
Right.
And that's how you met people, and that's how you got gigs.
Well, someone asked me the other day, how did I get on at the Comic? The Comic Lounge boys are very supportive of me. They put me on quite regularly. I've headlined there for the first time, which is really exciting, given that my first ever gig was there. I was really chuffed that, you know.
I mean, sure, you're bomb, but
all 4 nights as well.
It's terrible.
Terrible. I mean, you know, but once is enough. You just get to do once. No, but it was like someone asked me, how did I end up like get my gigs in the lounge? I was like, well, I sat at the back of the room for three years straight, you know.
Watched.
And I also sort of have a theory that, like, you know how they say with languages, that, you know, as much as you can learn at home and stuff, it's only when you're in that country using it regularly is when you start to get really fluent with it. And I think with comedy as well, there's, I feel
the
like,
same. Yeah.
You know, obviously you have your own, you know, rhythm and your own voice, but that idea of hearing someone kill, like, it must help, surely.
And you take it in. You don't steal material.
No, not at all. No. I'm not saying.
I do that.
But you know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, you're around.
Of course.
Because if you're only around open micers, then you're just going to assume that that's what the level is. But if you're immersing yourself and seeing how a headliner kills, like, one of my biggest pet peeves is new comics who don't wait for the headliner. Like,
I know.
Even if it's not your taste, I've learned a lot from headliners who I don't like, because it's almost like you stop listening about their material, but you see the other craftsmanship that they bring
of
into
course,
it.
Of course. You know what? You always watch the headliner.
Oh, totally.
It's a good idea. Even if you don't like them, they got to that position doing something right.
Exactly. That's exactly it. Like, the fact that they're headlining and you're not means they're doing something better than you.
You're also a great example of someone who has very good people skills, because that often the aroma is not great.
You're
heavy on the after show.
I am because I am so paranoid about having BO that I'd always rather like spray too much cologne than too little. I know it's really overbearing when people meet me.
No, you've got better over the years. I reckon you're smelling less like Brut 33 or Aramis or whatever.
No, cool water. It's the only cologne I use, and I reckon I've got a cool water 40 ml bottle in every piece of luggage of mine,
right,
just in case I'm caught out some woofoo country town. Because I don't know, you must know this in comedy. Sometimes when you're at the back of the room, you're chatting to comics, and you have to whisper to each other, and you're really close, and sometimes it's like breath and BO. Jesus. Being a fat brown guy, I'm very paranoid about playing a stereotype of being a smelly guy. So I always overdo it with the cologne at the start, because I'd rather be known as, you know, he smells too strong like cologne than someone who smells like a fucking, you know, bus seat.
I know that's what you call me behind my back.
Here
he comes, old bus seat.
Yeah, but you don't sweat too much on stage.
No,
do you?
I'm not a big sweater.
Whereas I'm a massive sweater. I have to take a change of clothes. Like, during festival, I'll have t-shirts backstage.
Right.
So I have one for stage, and then I get out of that and get into the other one.
I hope you say you changed during halfway, like a singer. You know,
Yeah. Like James Brown, someone puts a cord on top of me, and maybe I should do that for my next festival show.
Interlude.
Have
you? And has it been exciting doing all the stuff that you've been doing, like the TV? Because you were in the new series of Utopia, right?
Yeah. You guest starred in season one. As a cowboy?
Which is funny, because I did a gig in Queensland the other day, and the guy introduced me and said, and of course he played a property developer, and I'm just sitting there, I'm going to the other guy I was with, no, that's not me, I didn't ever, of course I did play a property developer, I've forgotten it.
Right, so you actually slipped your mind.
It
was really funny. I like that episode about the number of levels that they want to break.
I can't remember his name, but he was a property developer.
And I
said to Rob Sitch, who directs. Did he direct all the ones you're in?
Yeah. He directs every episode.
A genius. I said to him, why did you pick me? And he goes, we needed someone to play a gruff bogan. So.
Have you put that on a business card now? Dave O'Neill, gruff bogan. Now, like,
they're good.
They're great. They're good. They're using a lot of comedians for their...
Good.
And because they sort of feel that, like, the comedians get where the punchline is.
Yeah.
So you almost... You don't have to coach them as to how to play the character, because a comedian would know, well, are you the setup or are you the, you know, the punch? So you just... It comes out in a couple of weeks now. It's so exciting, because I was a huge fan of The Castle. Like, even before I did comedy myself, I didn't know anything about The Late Show, Frontline. None of that stuff was in my radar.
But
The Castle I knew really well. And
did someone show that to you when you came here?
Yeah, my accounting boss. He was like, you gotta see The Castle, it's on the telly tonight. I'm like, I don't know on a telly. He goes, what? Alright, I'll bring my DVD of it. Something like that. And I think he lent me his DVD of The Castle, and I watched it, and man, I loved it like straight away. I think it's one of those ones that I kind of wanted to take it back to mum and dad in Sri Lanka to show.
Yeah.
But then I worried, was it too Aussie? Is there, like, some of the best bits for me is like the way he just like he's amazed by rissoles, you know?
Yeah. And you know why that resonated so much?
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad's he's very similar to that. Kev is very similar to Dale Kerrigan.
Right.
We would do some of that stuff. So when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, this is like we would sit around with the trading post on a Thursday.
Right.
And there were four boys in my family, there still are, last time we checked. And one of us would read it out and go, mini bike, $150. And Dad would make a comment.
Like, tell us dreaming.
Oh, no, there's something wrong with that. Something wrong with that. And the thing about the trading post, it would come out on a Thursday. And you had to get it early because that's all the bargains were gone.
They didn't do that. So this is like eBay on paper.
It is eBay on paper. It was amazing. I bought my cars. We would buy our cars from the trading post.
Right.
Yeah. So I reckon that's why it resonated, because it was really relatable.
Yeah.
A lot of families that have grown up in that kind of, you know, working class, lower middle class.
And it also, there's a lot of sweetness to the story as well. You know, the QC, you know, Bud Tingle.
People said it was patronising to the working class, but...
Oh, did they? I didn't pick up on that.
That was normally said by the middle class.
Right, right. Whereas, like when people tell me that such and such is being racist about stuff and I'm laughing and I'm like, oh, no, it's funny. Yeah. You know, like, here's a thing with, you know, the TV show Mind Your Language?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
which
yeah,
is about yeah, yeah. a back from in the 80s or 70s, yeah, yeah. where it's an English teacher in UK teaching
all the stereotypes.
He's teaching all these foreign immigrants, and each country just was overhyped stereotype. But we, as a family growing up, we loved it.
Oh, you loved it?
Because it was like the first time we get to see brown people on TV, you know? So even if it's a hammed up version of us, like, you know, Ali Nadim saying something like, you know, oh, blimey. It was like, we're just high five.
Yeah, well, that's the same with the blue collar families with the castle.
Right.
They're the ones who loved it the most.
Right, right.
I reckon.
Actually, going full circle with the castle, I was interviewing at PwC. And so the big four accounting firms, so there's Deloitte, PwC, KPMG, and Ernst & Young. They all interview at the same time so that they don't compete with each other in terms of timing.
About accounting firms.
Right. Just this for your listeners who might not be fully up with the four big ones. They're probably thinking it's like Hawking Stewart.
This guy doesn't know anything about accounts. It's bullshit. Yeah, go on.
So you interview at the same time, so they don't compete in terms of timing.
Recruits. They're getting the hot recruits, aren't they?
Well, that's the thing. They don't compete in terms of, like, otherwise some people might go in early or whatever. They don't, like, undercut each other. They go in at the same time. And so the PwC person asked me, so why do you want to work with us instead of the others? You know, and I was like, and I sort of said, look, I'm not too sure, but I guess I sort of started mumbling. I went, I reckon it's the vibe, it's Mabo. And she lost it. She was like, oh my God, you know the castle. Because, like, I think that expectation of a Sri Lankan student, I'd been in the country maybe like 3 years at that point. So she's like, what? And then we just started talking about the castle for about 5 minutes.
That's
fantastic. Yeah, I think I got an offer from them as well because of the castle. So I love that film. And so then when they gave me the call up, I was so like, they were like, I will send you a role. I'm like, no, it doesn't matter what the role is. I'm in. Just count
me in. Yeah, exactly. If those guys ring, you go, yep, no worries. Yep, no, I'll be there. Yep, no problem. No problem.
Without naming the comedian who said it, you were telling me about one person that you wrote a role for, and they're like, look, as long as I'm not...
No, that was Hughesy.
I didn't want to say.
So with Dave Hughes, who's appearing on this podcast soon, he said, I wrote a show and he was in it. You were in it too.
Yeah.
And it's coming out soon. Relax.
It's great, by the way.
It's good. Yeah. We think it's good anyway. And Hughes,
yeah,
goes,
true. We're talking it up and we're in it.
I kept saying to Hughes, have you read the script? He goes, no, I haven't got time. Look, as long as I'm not a child molester, am I a child molester in it? No, of course you're not a child molester. Well, I'll do it.
Which is a good point. I think he's right.
He's a murderer. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Yeah. So he doesn't want to play. Yeah, but no.
Do you enjoy acting?
Me? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. I do. But I haven't done that much of it. I do little bits and pieces occasionally.
And bobs. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think, I mean, you can do it. So it's just a matter of relaxing, isn't it? Do you reckon?
I underestimated how much better it is when you know your lines, like, thoroughly. Like, so it's that weird thing where you're at home, and you learnt it, and you go, yeah, I can remember it, and you just forget that it's not just about reciting it back. You need to make it feel like it's flowing. Yeah. I know this sounds basic, but for people like us who don't really act, because what when we're on stage, I mean, we're essentially, you know, performing, and it's a sort of acting, but we're not, you know, tied into the script. Like, almost every time I reckon I've seen you, you might be doing the same routine, but never the same way twice.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So
you
just make it feel real in the moment. But when you're acting, you kind of need to set someone up. So if you don't say the certain words at the right way, it might throw it off a bit. Like, I know, like Curb Your Enthusiasm and stuff, they do it completely improvised without, but they just know the main kind of points they need to hit. But like when we did the Dave thing, like, you know, it floats. It gets so much better after you do a few takes because you
now
you know exactly what you're meant to say next and react to it. I think that's the other thing that we don't do as comedians. Don't
it's
react.
Listening apparently is important. Listening and reacting.
But the days are long, aren't they? Like, well, you know, like that day when we were filming your show, like you had the fifth day or something,
something like that.
And it was like non-stop every day for a while, then going home.
Yeah, it's early starts.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do. I mean, I got into comedy to sleep in, and now, you know, at 5 a.m. Thanks a lot.
One of my family remembered that apparently when I was asked as a kid, like when I was small, what do I want to be when I grow up? First thing I'd said was pussycat. I don't know what that meant. I don't know what that meant, but apparently that's how small I was. But then the second answer was, I don't know, but just something where I don't need an alarm clock. Which is so
great.
Because I think that's literally what I've ended up doing.
Yeah, become a comedian.
I didn't know that's why I was. But I love it. I reckon I've been in, like, so I did the roadshow again this year, and then I was back in town for 2 weeks. And I reckon fair dinkum, the last 2 weeks, I haven't set the alarm clock once. It's so nice.
It's
what with you with the kids? You have to get up, or do you get up on your own now?
You know, I have to get up. I get up at 7:30 Monday to Friday because.
How much sleep do you get in?
All my kids are a bit older now, so I get 8.5 hours a night, probably. Easy.
Yeah, solid.
Solid, yeah, yeah.
Do you nap before gigs and that?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
If I
this week I work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday night, and I drop the kids off at school on Wednesday, I just went back to bed for an hour.
Yeah, right.
I have a nap in the morning. Nap in the morning. Do you nap in the morning? Do you nap?
Oh, man, all the time. I get up, because are you taking me home, by the way?
Oh, yeah, I'm not going home. You're going to a gig. Where are you going?
To Little Collins Street. Little Collins
Little
and Swanton.
Collins.
Yeah, so we're not too far off.
Right,
I just suddenly realized the route you were taking. I'm like,
apartment.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was about to talk about the apartment same because it's sort of my bed is up against a window that's facing the city.
And you have no curtains.
And we do have blinds. I do have the blinds, but I love going to sleep with the view of the city at nighttime. It's beautiful. It feels like a hotel. Like, I love it, right?
Do you sleep nude? Do people look in?
Yeah, I do actually, and it's like
what a
this,
treat.
No,
what
but this is what I figured. If they're looking in, it's their
problem.
It's their, you know. I feel sorry for them.
Exactly.
And it's like, especially like, oh man, it would be so weird because I, yeah, whatever.
Hey, this episode of The Debrief is brought to you by Sheba. It's a great rideshare app where all the drivers are women. That's right, every single driver is a woman. So set up your account by downloading the Apple or Android app, and multiple users can use the one account. Enjoy the one account. And also, this is a great idea for dads like myself. You can set up an account for your daughters. Corporate accounts are available too. Sheba also takes booking. It's female-only driving service. Also, thanks to CoinJar. Set up a CoinJar account to buy and sell Bitcoin. It's really, really easy. No, trust me, it is. Just go to nearly.com.au/thedebrief to get a bonus when you set up your account. And Homie, they're a Melbourne-based social enterprise creating pathways out of homelessness. Do you know at the moment there's about 100,000 Australians live without a permanent address? And of those, 20,000 people sleep on the streets or in a makeshift shelter. Why not change this? Come on. Go to www.homie.com.au. Okay, back to the program.
So I reckon if you go down Elizabeth Street, if you take a left...
We're back on the debrief here with Dilruk J. Singer. We're still working out. I'm dropping him off.
At the Butterfly Club.
We've come from the great Glen Ira story writing session.
Story writing.
Storytelling. And now he's going to the Butterfly Club to do the young upcoming...
Melbourne Rising Stars.
What are you doing? Melbourne Rising Stars.
I do love when you do your some of the stand-up stuff that you know, even though you've done it a thousand times, you can still fumble it once in a while.
Oh, it's so true.
I love those moments because it's so real. It makes it
makes it real.
It
yeah.
makes it you know, like in the moment, like it feels like you are coming up on the spot.
Oh yeah.
Today I completely blank on stage at one point today in terms of just trying to get the wording of one joke right. And then I had to backpedal.
What joke was that?
It was the line's meant to go.
I watched your whole act.
Right, the line is meant to go. People are afraid of the things that they don't understand. Like I'm not afraid of immigrants because I'm an immigrant, but I'm afraid of junkies because unlike an immigrant, a junkie will steal everything except your job.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that's a good joke.
But then again, I even just then as well, I fumbled it again.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
Because if you say it the wrong way around, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, right.
So then I completely back, like I went, oh, let me try that again. But then by the time I actually hit the punchline, they went, But then what happened to me was it forced me to dig more and try and get. And actually, I think I can't remember what I have to listen back to the recording because I recorded the set.
Oh, did you?
But yeah. I record almost every gig. I reckon all.
That's a good idea.
Yes, because once in a while things like tonight will happen where I'm like, oh, I said something new today. What was it?
Yeah.
So then I'll listen back and go, oh, okay, yep, that's good. Let's add that to that. Because it's almost like sometimes some of my best, you know, jokes have come from bombing, or rather like something that used to work didn't work, and all of a sudden you start digging, you know, you're trying to stay afloat. You're starting to like, you just, it's that sort of thing, like if you're drowning you'll start flapping about trying to stay afloat.
Yeah, come up with some gold,
and then occasionally just hit something. Yeah, occasionally, you know.
Occasionally.
Yeah. Do you not record?
No, I did do. I do when during festivals. I do when I'm trying to make it better.
Do you listen back? Here's the thing.
Yeah,
I listen back on
long drives because, you know, I'm always driving to Albury or somewhere. Wyala. Yes.
Yeah, the
I'm
king.
I'm famous for it.
The that's king of regional
this,
Victoria.
That's why I'm doing this podcast.
Oh, that's great. You're right. You'll have
so many long trips. But
right.
I do listen back. And no, I actually don't. I think I'm pretty funny. I've got to say. I don't mind it. Sometimes I fast forward. Oh, this is boring, this bit.
Right.
But, I'm always interested. Oh, you know, with someone like me too, I sometimes talk too quickly, or
mumble,
or swear too much, or you know.
Do you find that based on the setup you're in, you swear more? Because the reason
definitely,
I ask is because I was doing a footy club gig about a month ago, a month
swear,
and a half ago,
swear.
And but not only just swear, I even changed my belief system because there was like they were so rough that there's a line where I say something like, oh, like this, you know, something about talking about ironically about how hot I am and something, and I'm like, oh, back off, ladies, is how I say normally. I'm like, come on, back off, bitches.
Oh, really?
And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
I just regressed. Like,
oh no, you've got to read the audience and go, well, this is like tonight, as I said, there are a lot of people wearing jumpers there, which is always a sign of wealth, jumpers.
Right, okay.
But you go to like a footy club, I was in Shepparton today, not that many jumpers there. In fact, the only guy wearing a jumper was a lawyer, who
right.
I said, you're loaded, you've got a jumper on. And
right.
They're all like, who's the lawyer? So you've got to read the room, I reckon. Yeah, definitely read the room.
What were you saying, 26, 27 years of now comedy?
20, okay.
Do you reckon there's a moment where there was a clicking for you? Like where you went, oh, okay, I think I've...
Yeah.
Like,
well,
how far...
It took about 5 or 6 years for me.
Yeah, right, okay.
Probably,
what do you think it was, though?
That's a very good question.
Did you? Because I know you used to use instruments at one point.
Oh yeah, I used my bass guitar. Yeah,
right.
yeah. But that's a pain in the bum carrying stuff around.
But do you reckon after you dropped it or picked it up?
I always started stand up just as a stand up, and I would bring the bass in for like festival shows or something like that.
Right,
and then I would
right.
occasionally bring it to gigs because
yeah, just the it just enhances the
But then I got very. Well, in my own words, got good at stand-up and my bass playing stayed the same. So it wasn't very good.
I don't know.
You know what? I reckon I got a lot better when I had kids because it gave me more focus in a way. Yeah, I don't know
That's
why.
Interesting. Louis C.K. says the exact same thing.
Yeah, I got better.
Because
got better.
He goes, all of a sudden, stand-up became this thing where he has to do it well so this kid can survive.
It's very true. And in Australia, you've got to do all sorts of different kinds of gigs to make a living. So, I mean, I do 4 or 5 gigs a week, but there's such a variety.
There's only going to be a handful of comics like you who don't necessarily do a regular telly job. I mean, you're on the telly and the radio quite frequently.
I want to be on it more.
But, yeah, sure. But, I mean, you're one of the few who's been able to...
If you got Rob's number, we'll ring him now. 1939.
Rob Schneider. Yeah.
Rob Schneider, Rob Sitch. Any of the Robs. Rob Gel. I'll settle for the weatherman. Let's ring him up.
But I mean, in terms of being able to do full,
because we're just talking about the castle, we could ring him and say, "Rob, how you going?"
It's Dave O'Neill here, season one, Utopia, episode four.
I'm in the car with you're like, "Shh, no, I'm not in the car."
Yeah. You're with Nazim Hussain.
We're talking about the castle. We think it's a pretty good movie.
Because I do mean that, like sincerely, that there's a lot, like, it's really hard to live off stand-up. And but the thing is, people don't realize that you have to be a utility. You have to be able to do a footy club gig, council gig like tonight, corporate clean. I'm starting to get more comfortable with, I wouldn't say getting good at it.
You'd be fine.
No, I'll put it this way. I reckon I could be.
You know,
I'd be heaps better.
Because you've stopped doing the routine about jizzing on the audience, so that's good. Which is seriously one of Do Rock Song routines. Which you can't go along with the BHP shareholders.
Oh, come on. They do so much of the oceans. Do you reckon they care? That I've just, I've been literally a drop in the ocean. That's
you can do that to the plumbers conference. Probably not. Don't take it right here.
Oh, it's left here, but I'll get
it's
off.
Left here?
Yeah, but you know, you can't turn left here. So
you haven't seen me drive. I'm not a legal driver.
What time?
No, just you turn it.
What time is it?
It's 15 past 10.
Oh, yeah, I better go. I was going to say, chuck a U in, I'll just jump out here or something like that. Well, thanks for having me, Dave O'Neill.
It's been awesome.
Mate, really appreciate it. And thanks for the ride as well.
No problem at all. I've got another passenger now. I'm an Uber.
This is the last thing. This is literally what we were trying to talk about before. So there were people asked for Dave's book, The Summer of 82. Thanks for plugging it.
Thanks for plugging it.
And you signed it, and then they... I was asking you whether you'd try and then I got the book myself and you signed it for me. You've already signed it.
I've already signed it.
Oh Jesus, how bad's your memory?
That's my memory.
No, but yeah, I asked you whether you personalize
it.
every book sign.
Try to sometimes. So I've signed so many of them. Generally, if they have a real Aussie name, like it's, you know, Gary, or I just put great Aussie name. If it's for Gary and Michelle, great Aussie couple.
Yeah.
For younger people, I write a history lesson. But for you, what did I write? A cultural...
You said, Dill, cultural lesson right here.
Yeah, well, I've never written that before.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
You're the first Sri Lankan person to get a book.
Right, don't say it like that. The first Sri Lankan to get a book.
No,
get
your
book.
Get my book.
On that note, I better get out. The reverse taxi driver situation. Thanks, buddy.
See you, man.
See you, bud.
$40.20. Yeah. Feel free to leave a tip. Give me a good rating.
$4.20 and everything.
I don't take Uber, but I know you give them ratings.
Do you want me to jump out? Or you just
you go, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much. See you, bud.
I'll record it.
Yeah.
There he goes.